Welcome to the Curiosities Unknown podcast, and welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're going to try to get to the bottom of a subject that seems to capture people's imaginations forever. Alchemy.
Oh, yeah, alchemy. It's definitely got that kind of mysterious, maybe even magical image, doesn't it?
Totally. Like something straight out of a movie, bubbling cauldrons, cryptic symbols, and that whole idea of like spinning straw into gold. Or was that lead into gold?
You know, you've already hit on something really key there, that whole questioning of the pop culture assumptions around alchemy. Because so much of what we think we know about it is actually really distorted, and that's exactly what makes it so fascinating to dig into.
Right. And that's precisely why we're doing this deep dive today. We're taking a closer look at this blog post called The Secrets of Ancient Alchemy. Was it more than just turning lead into gold?
Great blog post.
Yeah.
Really gets into it.
Because there's a whole lot more to this than meets the eye, wouldn't you say?
100%. This deep dive, it's going to take us way beyond those stereotypical images of greedy alchemists hunched over their experiments and reveal alchemy as a deeply profound, even philosophical, system of thought, a system that really tried to bridge the gap between the physical and the spiritual.
All right, now you've got me intrigued. So let's just get right to it. Was it really all just about turning lead into gold, or was there something more, something deeper going on?
Okay, so first we gotta shatter that myth. Turning lead into gold, it was never actually the main point.
Really?
Yeah, think of it more like this. The real treasure they were after, it was an understanding of the universe itself. Like, how does it all work and where do we fit in? It was about this idea that everything is connected. The physical world, our minds, and even the spiritual realm.
Okay, I'm already getting some serious Matrix code vibes here. So they were kind of like decoding the universe's secrets, but not just with science as we know it today. It was more like a mix of science, spirituality, and self-exploration all rolled into one.
You've got it. To them, there wasn't a huge difference between experimenting with metals in a lab and exploring the depths of the human soul. They were both part of the same big pursuit transformation.
All right, that's pretty mind-blowing. And speaking of transformation, that brings us to the legendary Philosopher's Stone, right?
Exactly.
It's like the holy grail of alchemy. But was it really just about getting rich? I mean, that's what we always hear, right?
The Philosopher's Stone. See, this is the perfect example of how much we oversimplify alchemy. Instead of thinking of it as some magical recipe for endless wealth, try to imagine it as a symbol for something they called the magnum opus.
Magnum opus. Now that sounds intense.
It does, doesn't it? It basically translates to great work. And that's exactly what it was for them, a lifelong journey, a constant striving for self-perfection.
Oh, interesting.
So the alchemists, they believed that just as lead, this dense kind of dull metal, could be purified and transformed into gold.
Right.
So too could the human spirit be refined and elevated to achieve a state of true spiritual enlightenment.
Wow. So are you saying that the actual process of transmuting metals was like a mirror for their own internal transformation? They were trying to turn themselves into the gold standard of humanity.
Exactly. And they saw the same principle of transformation playing out in the elements that make up the world around us.
You mean like earth, water, air, fire, that kind of thing?
Those are the ones that we learn about them in school, in science class, right? But the alchemists, they took a different perspective. They saw these elements not just as physical substances, but as living forces that literally governed everything in the universe.
Okay, so earth, water, air, and fire each had its own sort of unique energy or power.
Exactly. Earth represented solidity, stability. Water, it was fluidity, adaptability.
Yeah.
Air, dynamism, the breath of life. And then there's fire, the ultimate transformative element.
I can see how they'd make those connections. So if these four elements were the building blocks of the universe, what about that fifth element you always hear about? Quintessence, right?
You got it. Quintessence, or ether. That was the big one. And this wasn't something you could just find lying around. This was like the pure, concentrated essence of creation itself, thought to be the source of all life and consciousness.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if the four elements are like the ingredients, quintessence is the secret sauce, the source code of the universe.
You could say that it was seen as this incredibly potent force with the power to heal, to rejuvenate, maybe even to grant immortality. There were even whispers that the elusive Philosopher's Stone itself was either made of quintessence or somehow drew its power from it.
Okay, hold on. My brain's trying to catch up here. This quintessence stuff, it almost sounds like magic.
It might sound pretty out there to us, but to the alchemists, it was the ultimate key to unlocking the mysteries of the universe and transcending the limitations of the physical world. Their pursuit of this knowledge was about pushing the boundaries of what was possible, both physically and spiritually.
So wait, Are you saying they actually believe they could achieve immortality by understanding this quintessence, like literally live forever?
Well, some might have taken it literally, but it's important to remember that for alchemists, everything had a deeper meaning. They were all about symbolism and hidden layers of meaning. It was like their own secret
Oh,
language.
that's interesting. Okay, so give me an example. What kind of symbols are we talking about?
Well, take a look at some of the words they used. Calcination and sublimation, for example. These weren't just fancy terms for chemical processes, they were metaphors for the spiritual journey itself.
Okay, now I'm hooked. Decode those words for me. What do they actually mean?
Let's start with calcination. Imagine heating a substance over a fire, like in one of those cauldrons you mentioned earlier, until it burns down to ash,
Right.
right?
Okay.
Well, for them, this wasn't just about breaking something down to its basic parts. This was about purification, burning away impurities to reveal its true essence, like refining gold.
So if we're thinking about this in terms of self-transformation, it's like burning away negativity, doubts, limiting beliefs, anything that's not our true selves to reveal the pure potential within.
You got it. And then you have sublimation. Think about how a solid can transform directly into vapor without ever becoming a liquid.
Okay, yeah.
To them, this was a powerful symbol for the soul's ascent from the material world into the spiritual realm.
Wow, that's beautiful imagery. And kind of spooky at the same time. So every step they took in their lab, every process, every experiment, it was like a mirror reflecting their own inner journey.
Exactly. It's like they understood the physical act of, say, transmuting metals as a way to understand and ultimately achieve spiritual transformation.
That's seriously mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And speaking of achieving the impossible, they were also really into this idea of an elixir of life, right? Trying to cheat to death itself.
You're exactly right. But just like everything else in alchemy, it's not quite as simple as it seems.
Okay, so before we got so caught up in quintessence, we were talking about this whole elixir of life thing. And I gotta say, it's a pretty wild idea, this legendary potion that promises eternal youth. Was that really what they were after, like trying to actually live forever?
The elixir of life. Man, it's such a classic example of how alchemy gets misinterpreted, because it wasn't just about erasing wrinkles or, finding a way to become immortal.
So if it wasn't about literally living forever, what was the deeper meaning behind this quest for the elixir of life?
Well, for alchemists, the elixir of life, much like that philosopher's stone we were discussing, wasn't really thought of as a purely physical substance. Instead, it represented this idea of reaching a state of spiritual enlightenment so profound that it would allow you to transcend the limits of your physical body to exist beyond the cycle of life and death.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't about cheating death, but about evolving to a point where you've risen above the need to even worry about death.
You could put it that way. And this is where things get really interesting, because it's where we start to see these fascinating connections between this ancient art of alchemy and the birth of modern science.
Hold on a second. You're saying alchemy and science are connected. I always thought of those two as being total opposites. Weren't alchemists seen as like mystics and magicians, while scientists were all about logic and reason?
It's true that today we tend to separate the two very distinctly, but back then the lines were blurry because a lot of the practical techniques that alchemists developed over the centuries, like distillation, crystallization, those actually formed the basis for what would eventually become the scientific method.
So in a way, while they were busy trying to figure out the secrets of spiritual enlightenment, they were also laying the groundwork for modern chemistry without even realizing it. That's kind of ironic, isn't it?
You could definitely say that. These alchemists, they were meticulous record keepers. They were constantly experimenting, carefully documenting their processes, noting down all their observations about the different properties of metals, minerals, all sorts of substances. And those practices, those rigorous approaches, that's what paved the way for modern scientific inquiry.
That's incredible when you think about it, that some of the tools and techniques that we use in labs today were first developed by alchemists who were searching for the philosopher's stone and the elixir of life.
It's true. And it gets even wilder because some of the biggest names in the history of science were super into alchemy.
Really? Like who?
I'm talking some of the greats, Isaac Newton, for example.
Wait, are you serious? Sir Isaac Newton, as in the father of physics? The guy who literally wrote the book on gravity, he was messing around with alchemy.
He was, and let me tell you, the guy was passionate about it. In fact, Newton actually wrote way more about alchemy than he ever did about physics or math. Can you believe that?
I had no idea. That's like finding out that Einstein moonlighted as a magician. So, What, are you saying that all that dabbling in alchemy might have actually influenced Newton's scientific breakthroughs?
Well, it's impossible to say for sure, of course. But I think his fascination with alchemy definitely shows us that he had this deep desire to understand the fundamental forces that drive the universe. This drive to uncover hidden connections, to unlock hidden potential. That's pure alchemy, wouldn't you say?
That's amazing. It really makes you question everything you thought you knew about the line between what we call scientific and what we consider mystical. But, I mean, alchemy isn't really considered a real science anymore, is it? Does that mean its legacy is dead?
Not at all. Sure, you won't find any universities with alchemy departments these days. But the core idea at the heart of alchemy, this idea that profound transformation is possible, both within ourselves and in the world around us, that's an idea that still resonates strongly with people today.
I can see that. Okay, so then break it down for me. How do the ideas of this centuries-old practice, a practice that most people probably associate with, like wizards and magic, how do those ideas still hold relevance in today's world, a world that's obsessed with technology and instant gratification?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's one we're going to dig into right now.
All right, so we're back. And I have to say, this whole idea that alchemy isn't just a relic of the past, that it's still relevant to our lives today, that's pretty mind-blowing.
It really is, isn't it?
So you were saying that even though we might not be, you know, brewing up potions and elixirs in the literal sense, those core principles of alchemy are actually still alive and well today.
Exactly. I mean, think about fields like psychology, spirituality, personal development. They're all about transformation in one way or another.
Okay, yeah. So instead of trying to transform metals, like the alchemists did, we're now more focused on transforming ourselves.
You got it. Remember how the alchemists were obsessed with this idea of purification, of refining something to unlock its hidden potential?
Right.
Well, today, tons of people are applying that same principle to their own lives. It's all about self-improvement, self-discovery.
So it's like that whole magnum opus thing we were talking about earlier, the alchemist's quest for self-perfection.
Yeah.
Except now, it's not about turning lead into gold. It's about each of us trying to unlock our own personal best, our own inner gold, right?
Couldn't have said it better myself. We might not be searching for a literal philosopher's stone these days, but a lot of people still find meaning in that pursuit of self-discovery, that journey of becoming the best versions of themselves. It's about identifying the things in our lives that are holding us back, those negative thought patterns, those limiting beliefs, and then finding ways to transform them into something positive, something that helps us grow.
That's a really powerful way to look at it. So it's like we're taking that ancient alchemical wisdom and making it relevant to our modern lives. Instead of transmuting metals, we're transmuting our habits, our mindsets, our whole approach to life.
Exactly. And this idea of transformation, it's not just limited to personal growth either. Just like those alchemists believed they could influence the world around them through their work, we can apply these same principles of transformation to make a real difference in the world.
Oh, I like that. So it's not just about personal alchemy then, it's about using those same principles to create a better world.
Precisely. Imagine if we approached all of the big problems we're facing today, social injustice, climate change, political conflicts. Imagine if we approached them with that same alchemical spirit, that same belief in the possibility of transformation, that same willingness to experiment and explore new solutions.
It's like we're all alchemists in a way, searching for the right formulas and processes to help us transform not just ourselves, but the world around us too.
You know, that's a really profound way to put it, because who knows what we might be able to achieve if we all embrace that alchemical mindset, the curiosity, the willingness to experiment, the unwavering belief in the power of transformation. It's pretty exciting when you think about it.
It really is. This has been such a fascinating deep dive exploring not just the history of alchemy, but also its surprising relevance to our lives today. Who knew that a practice devoted to transmuting metals could be so full of wisdom about personal growth and creating a better world?
It's amazing, isn't it? The alchemists were on to something truly special. And the best part is that their insights are just as relevant today as they were centuries ago.
Absolutely. So for all of you listening, remember, even in the most unexpected places, like a centuries-old practice focused on turning lead into gold, you can find incredible wisdom and inspiration wisdom that can help you transform your life and the world around you. That's it for our deep dive today, everyone. Thanks for joining us.